My name is Connor, the music coordinator here at CJSF, and on behalf of everyone at the station, thank you to all who supported us with a donation during this year's fund drive. Thanks to you, we are rising higher and reaching further.
Can get is static or variations on the central musical rhythm.
I only wish there was some way we could tell it to shut up. It's driving me crazy. And it keeps getting louder.
We have no way of estimating the volume this creature can produce.
The only logical solution is to listen to CJS at 90.1 FM. They broadcast from Burnaby Mountain in British Columbia. Let's tune in now.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. We at New Dimensions thank you for your support. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Even though we ultimately desire to be happy, most of us find ourselves taking in sorrow, pain, and tragedy through everything we see, hear, and feel, both in our own experience and through the media. It's like we are breathing in suffering. And this suffering, both our own and that of others, can sit inside us, weighing us down and dampening our happiness and well-being. There is a Tibetan meditation practice called Tonglen that can allow that suffering to be transformed by the light of our true nature. It combines breath, awareness, imagination, and an energetic transformation process that opens our hearts to reveal and cultivate kindness, love, compassion, and wisdom. Today we'll be exploring that practice with our guest, Lama Paldon Droma. Lama Paldon Droma is a licensed psychotherapist, spiritual teacher, and coach. She has studied Buddhism in the Himalayas with some of the preeminent Tibetan masters of the 20th century, including Kalu Rinpoche, who authorized her to become one of the first Western lamas. She is the founder of Sukha City Foundation, a Tibetan Buddhist center in Marin County in Northern California. Join us for the next hour as we explore an ancient and profound meditation practice that nourishes our hearts and awakens our mind with our guest, Lama Paldon Droma. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Lama Paldon, welcome.
Thank you. Delight to be with you.
It's my pleasure having you. I forgot to mention that you are also the author of Love in Every Breath, Tonglen Meditations for Transforming Pain into Joy. And thank you for this book that really explains and really takes us on the journey of this meditation practice. And before we get into that, I would love for you to say something about how it is that you became a lama, some of your personal story.
Well, I've always been very interested since I was a small child in what's underneath the surface, like in finding something that I thought in my little young three-year-old mind was more real under the surface. And that led me to study in spirituality when I got older. And really, I had a lot of interest in all the different religions, especially in the mysticism of all the traditions. And I also, simultaneously growing up in an upper middle class environment, I looked around at age 13 and realized that all my friends' parents who had gone to the best schools, had the best job, you know, created the beautiful life, were all miserable and neurotic. And that was when I was like 13, 14 years old. And I realized that all this did not add up to happiness and that I wanted to find a different route. I wanted to go a different path for myself. So then I set about finding that.
And that took you to the Himalayas at some point, right?
It did, yeah. And then, you know, I started studying and practicing Zazen. I did a lot of yoga. I was studying in Sufism and mystical Christianity. I was studying in college comparative mysticism. And then I met a teacher in San Francisco, old Tibetan master Kala Rinpoche, and he invited us to study with him at his monastery in Darjeeling in India. So I went, and that was it.
And how old were you then?
25.
25. And I just want to tell our listeners, because you and I talked about this before the interview began, Kalu Rinpoche, and for those who are listening, he spells his name K-A-L-U, Kalu Rinpoche. He was this small, sort of wizened-looking, I don't know, he looks right out of Tolkien or something.
Yoda, in the tall, skinny form of Yoda.
Exactly, exactly. And he just was the emanation. I had the good karma, I guess, to meet him and to be with him a little bit. And a truly, truly holy man that just exuded love. Just exuded love. Just one of the few people that I would consider a true, true holy man. So you got to study with him in India, is that? Or in
yes, in India, in Darjeeling. His monastery was in Darjeeling, not in the town itself, but the district of Darjeeling. So yes, I was there off and on for some years, and I felt really fortunate. I had 12 years to study with him. 3.5 of those, I was in three-year retreat and didn't see him for that time, but he gave us all the teachings, empowerments to go into retreat, so...
And then when you came out of that 12-year, what is it called? He bestowed a lamaship, or what do you call
well,
it?
Well, oftentimes the three-year retreat is regarded as a training ground for being a lama, which is like a priest or a roshi or a rabbi. And so a year after my three-year retreat, when I finally was able to see him again, he, in front of many people in Palo Alto in an event, authorized me as a lama and asked me to help with the center and various things like that. So
that's beautiful. And in what year would that have been?
So that was the end of 86.
Okay.
So, and I was 33 or so, yeah,
right,
at that time.
Right.
So a long time ago.
Yes, yes. But very, very beautiful. And you also spent some time with the 16th Karmapa. In Sikkim, I believe.
Yes, I was really fortunate to spend a lot of time with 16th Karmapa, and he also was such a huge embodiment of love, just the vastness of his love and realization. And both Kala Rinpoche and Karmapa were complete embodiments of realization and love, but they were very unique and different. And I think that's one thing that these great masters show us is realization and embodiment of love and compassion can take many different forms, and people have many different styles and personalities, and that's wonderful.
And I think it's really interesting that they had no hesitation in recognizing you as a teacher, as a woman.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I don't know why, but I never for one instant felt any misogyny or like I couldn't do something because I was a woman or any of that. I was blown away by how welcoming all these high lamas and great masters were and just incredibly gracious and loving. And there were certain old rules in the monastery that were, you know, had been in place for hundreds of years. And when the women showed up, I remember Karmapa just saying, oh, yes, well, whatever, we'll just forget about that. And they opened us to stay in the monastery, or they opened the monastery for us to stay, which was never allowed before. We were able to go in all the temples. So I experienced just great equanimity from them about the whole gender issue.
That's beautiful. Well, I'd love for us to get into this Tonglen meditation. Now, Tonglen, and for our listeners, it's spelled T-O-N-G-L-E-N, Tonglen. But not to get hung up with this Tibetan term, because you call it love in every breath. It's so, you know, you really make it so accessible to all of us and beyond the Tibetan trappings, and because it's just really a practice for all of us, especially in these times. And I would love to talk about some of the parts of it, and starting with one of the most important ones that I felt was the self-love, starting with self-love. And why is that important?
Well, it's interesting. This version of Tonglen, and, you know, I talk about in the book, is from this awakened woman, Naguma, that 1,000 years ago. And this version includes that before you do the feeling and transformation of suffering of others, that we do for ourselves first, and that we very much cultivate compassion for our human self and love. And I think this is incredibly important, because many people find it easier to love others than oneself. But if we're grouchy and mean to ourselves, it's like at the center of who we are, there's like cruelty or meanness or hatred. And then it's not a full and complete experience and manifestation of love if at the core we're, you know, completely berating ourselves and putting ourselves down. So I think it's brilliant that in Naguma's version, in this Shampa Tonglen, that it does start with oneself first. It's like love from the inside out, so that love can completely penetrate us and our hearts are completely open to all that is. In fact, we're the first person in the center of our mandala, as Dingo Kensi said once. You know, that each person is the center of your own mandala. So from the center, inside out, we want to cultivate love and not leave ourselves out of it.
I think that you even talk about if we really want to have love for others, the only way we can sustain that, and the word sustain it, is through self-love first.
Yes, because I think if we haven't been willing to allow ourselves to acknowledge and feel, and then allow through this process the liberation of the suffering of ourselves. If we don't have the courage to face our own suffering and to feel and allow it to be liberated, then we're not really going to be able to go the distance with others, you know, because we are in some ways then afraid of the suffering. And that actually gives it power over us that it doesn't need to have.
Exactly. And I know that one of the steps in the practice, and you have 8 steps, and before we get into this step, I'd just like to say that you have what you call on-the-spot practice. I mean, if you go through the book, Love on Every Breath, you have the longer meditation or the more formal, even Tibetan part, you know, meditation. But then you have, along with that, this on the spot where those of us in Western garb and in Western the practice, we can just really tune into. So before we go into that, I just want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Lama Paldin Droma, and she is the author of Love on Every Breath, Tonglen Meditation for Transforming Pain into Joy. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, Lama Paldin, and she spells that P-A-L-D-E-N, lamapaldin.com. newdimensions.org. Or you can give there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Here with Lama Paldin Droma, and she is the author of Love on Every Breath, Tonglen Meditation for Transforming Pain into Joy. And I would love to talk about one of the steps of this practice and looking at the self, the suffering self. And this practice, and I want to say this is like counterintuitive for most Westerners.
To work on self-love.
Well, because like in this practice, what you're doing, and I'll have you explain it, but what you do is that you have us imagine ourselves across from ourselves. And that suffering, you imagine it as dark smoke. And then you have us breathe in that dark smoke. And that's the part that is so counterintuitive for Westerners. And that's a whole thing about Tonglen, is that, wait a minute. Breathe in suffering? Are you kidding me? So please help us understand this process.
Yes, absolutely. And many people who have been taught Tonglen feel like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to take in more suffering. But that's the brilliance of this particular Tonglen, is that first, before you do any of that, you acknowledge and acknowledge awakened presence. And in the traditional version, in the form of the Bodhisattva of Love and Compassion, Chenrezig, I explain in the book that you could use Jesus or some other figure as the embodiment of awakened love and compassion. But you call upon that presence and then imagine that you receive the blessing and that actual divine presence, or in Buddhist terms, awakened mind, is actually present in your heart chakra, so that it's not the ego that transforms the suffering. We feel the suffering, we develop compassion, and we breathe it in, and it's the true nature in the form of a brilliant light, in the form of a vajra or a drop of brilliant light that actually then transforms the suffering, so that it's not our little ego trying to do this big thing.
I love the visualization that you give us, it really works for me, I must say, to breathe in, let's say, this dark smoke that we've already been sitting with, that all is good, all is well, all is awakened. There's this light in our heart. And when that dark smoke comes down and hits that heart chakra, that light, and you use the term, it's like a lightning bolt of transformation. Boom! And then we breathe out that light and that healing energy. Do I have it right?
Yes, absolutely right. Yes, and this is the method as I learned it from Kala Rinpoche, who it was orally transmitted for 1,000 years until now. It's the first time in its entirety it's been written down. So that's all part of this 1,000-year oral transmission, exactly what you said, and that the true nature, divine nature, sends out a lightning bolt that instantly then transforms all that suffering into healing energy and love.
And in the part of it where we're working with our own self-love, then we send that out to that vision that we have of our own suffering self sitting across from us, facing us.
Yeah, into our imagined self, human self in front of us. So we're anchoring ourselves in a sense of being inseparable with divine presence, awakened mind. And then we're seeing our human self in front of us and cultivating a compassion for all our challenges, for our ups and downs, for everything we've gone through. And people do sometimes really have trouble with this, but if you really think about it logically, each and every being is worthy of love. And we're all essentially equal, and we're all worthy of love. So we can't exclude ourselves. We have to really learn to also have compassion and love for ourselves.
Now, that doesn't mean that we have to love the actions of people.
Exactly. We don't. It doesn't mean we condone our own stupid actions or anybody else's destructive actions at all. But it means that we recognize, say, take somebody who we think is really destructive and a harmful person. We can understand they're trying to be happy, and the way they're trying to be happy is by hurting other people, either inadvertently or on purpose. That is supreme stupidity. To think that we're going to be happy by being destructive. It may not, you know, come back to us right away, but that is not the way to real happiness. And there isn't one philosophical or religious tradition on earth that will tell you that that is the way to happiness. So the people doing that, we can have compassion for them in their ignorance and stand up, fight against their actions, but yet internally have compassion and understanding that they are very, very confused and lost.
Now, when you say stand up and do action, this practice also will help us from burnout, right?
Yes.
Because
yes.
I kind of put it, I say, be an activist without driving yourself crazy. You know, I mean, so this practice helps us to do right action, let's say, but not be attached to the outcome? Or
well,
what do we do?
I think there's a couple things, and I wanted, hopefully, you know, activists to receive some nourishment and sustenance from this meditation and practice, because in doing activism in the world, which is so important, as we know, and such a valuable service to humanity and to the earth and the animals, it's often becomes discouraging, and it's a hard road. So the activists need their hearts replenished, and this meditation very much replenishes our heart and sustains and nourishes us. So that's another benefit. Plus, as we do this meditation, we clear things up in ourselves and come to a place of more spaciousness, more peace, and definitely much more felt sense of loving kindness. And that clears the space for us to act more effectively.
Right. We speak of the three jewels, you know, the Buddha, the Sangha, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And I'd love to talk a little bit about that. We talked a little bit about, first of all, establishing something in the beginning, and that would be called the Buddha, although it could be calling in any entity that really speaks to our heart. It could be Mother Mary. It could be Mother Earth. It
could be the Great Spirit.
Great Spirit, Wankatongan, or,
yes.
you know, whatever our discipline or our practice or our particular religious vocation is or orientation is.
Right. And that was really important to me too. And Kala Rinpoche did this. He had people from various religions that came and studied with him. There were quite a few Catholic priests that came and studied with him in India from different parts of the globe, you know, as well as other people. And so he would make these practices accessible to them, and he would say, adapt it, you know, for your own purposes. So this practice, the basic essential points of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha come in all traditions. So Buddha translates roughly as like awakened mind, awakened vast, unimpeded love and wisdom. So we could say that's the same as God, the same as Allah in its essence.
Or Jesus might be.
Or
like
Jesus
a
like Muhammad, yeah. Or Mary like Corn Mother, or Lakshmi, or Kuan Yin, or, you know, these principles are come in various traditions. And the Dharma,
Shekinah, I guess.
The Shekinah, yes. From Judaism, yes. The feminine principle. And the piece about the Dharma is the teachings of truth. Well, that comes in all traditions. And the inner meaning of the Dharma is what we come to know as true in our own practice.
And that truth really goes down into that it's non-dual, that we're not separated from one another, that nothing is separated.
Nothing is separated, and we're not separate from the divine or awakened presence. We're not separate from Buddha or God or either.
And many religions, they'll talk about, that we're a wave in the ocean of God, but we're not. We might be this wave, but we're never separated from this great consciousness. And that's kind of a metaphor to think about it, that we're part of this great consciousness.
I think it's part of the great mystery that we're in is that our consciousness, there's no separation between your consciousness, my consciousness, anybody else's consciousness, yet we have unique consciousness, and that's the amazing mystery and of what we find ourselves in.
So we get to express this in our own unique way.
Absolutely. And that's part of the flowering of every individual, all the different cultures, the different religions. It's the flowering, and I always feel like would you want a garden with just one kind of flower? If you had humanity with only one kind of religion or one way of doing things, that might be okay, but it'd be a little boring. And so to have all these flowers of the garden, all these 7 billion people, all these traditions, all these cultures.
But really tapping into a single truth.
Right.
And the third one, so we said the Buddha, the Dharma, or the truth.
And the teachings.
And the teaching. And the last one is the Sangha. So what can you say about what the Sangha is?
Well, in actual Buddhist terms, the Sangha means the enlightened Sangha. So it means all those who on the path that we're on who've come before us, who have demonstrated that you can achieve awakening or divine union. So, for example, in Catholicism, the saints are the noble Sangha. They show that humans can do this. Or in India, the yogis and yoginis are the noble Sangha. They show that you can do this. It's not just theoretical. You can actualize awakening. So the noble Sangha are our inspiration, our guides, our mentors, and really to show us that this is possible. So there's great gratitude for those beings that show us the way. And all of us take inspiration not only from our own culture, but from other cultures, like from Gandhi or, Nelson Mandela or other people.
Exactly. So that's one way of really tuning into it, but also our human companions who are I call them sincere seekers that we might be walking this pilgrim path with.
Yeah, and that's our fellow companions on the path are a source of great support and friendship and joy and love. And I think it'd be hard to get through some of our hard times without our dear friends.
Exactly. I'm here with Lama Paldin Droma, and she is the author of Love on Every Breath, Tonglen Meditation for Transforming Pain into Joy. She is also the founder of the Sukhasiddha Foundation, a Tibetan Buddhist center in Marin County in Northern California. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.